The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. The Center for Autism and Related Disorders advises working with a board-certified behavior analyst who has experience with autism before starting any intensive behavioral intervention. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
Good morning and welcome to Autism Live. I'm Shannon Penrod and we're coming to you live from many different places in and around Los Angeles. I'm here with Dr. Doreen Graham-Pichet and we're saying happy Wednesday to her. She's joining us for a segment that we call Ask Dr. Doreen. She's going to be answering your questions in real time. We are going to be with you live for the next hour, and this is live to let you know this is September 2nd, 2020. I hope that someday there's going to be a library of videos and we'll go, oh, well, those are the 2020 videos because they look like this, right? I hope it doesn't bleed into, well, now it's 2022 and we're still doing it this way. Let's hope, right? But anyway, we're here with you live for the next hour. We want to hear your thoughts, feelings, questions, and concerns. You can write those in a myriad of different ways, but the most efficient ways right now are on Facebook and on YouTube. You can be watching us live there. You can also watch us live on our homepage, autism-live.com. There is a chat button there too. We're just getting a little bit delayed on those. I have some of them that I grabbed, but it's a live chat, but the live portion of it is a little, gremlins. But we're also live on Periscope and Twitter right now. So you can be writing in there as well. If you want to watch us recorded, if you are watching us recorded, you're probably watching us on iTunes where we're a free download, either sound only or video and sound, free in both ways. We are also available now on Spotify, Deezer, iHeartRadio, and more to come, more news to come. I keep telling you that, but we're almost about to announce. I have to say before we get started, Dr. Graham-Pichet, that in the opener now, instead of showing all the pictures of me with the brown hair, Traven has popped in some other things, pictures of you and me and Dr. Temple Grandin. And I was talking to Dr. Temple Grandin tomorrow. She's going to be joining us live again on September 15th. So I just want to put that out to everybody that if you have questions for Temple, send them over. But it was making me smile because I said to her yesterday, how are you dealing with COVID? How's it going for you? Her birthday was just 3 days ago. And she said, you know what I did? I went and I flew a kite. And I was like, you did? How was it? And she said, oh, it was great. I went to an empty parking lot and I flew a kite for a couple of hours and everybody should go fly a kite. And I thought, you know how normally people say to you, go fly a kite, and it's an insult. But I think we should be saying that to everybody right now. You're stressed, go fly a kite. So doesn't that sound like fun?
It sounds fantastic. Truly does.
I think I got to dig the kites out. We used to go do that every once in a while. But anyway, so how are you and how are you dealing with the quarantine and what have you done that's fun? I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh, thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm doing fine. Maybe I've told you, I'm not sure. I have gotten into all kinds of crafts around the house, which is lots and lots of fun. My youngest daughter was moving out, as you know, Shannon, back to college. And we spent a lot of time making bead curtains for her, which are just so much fun to do. And it turned out really, really nice. I have to show you at some point.
I need to see pictures, yes.
Yeah. And then also, of course, I'm doing a lot of rock painting.
Okay. This sounds fabulous.
Yeah, I'm enjoying having time on, right? Because I'm also kind of semi-retired. So it's really nice to actually finish at 5 every day instead of working into the night. So it's nice.
That's rock painting. I need pictures.
I'm
craft. I used to call my mother an abandoned craft fair because I love craft, and now I'm just as guilty. I don't always finish my crafts, but I love to craft. I think it's a great distressor. Excuse me. And I just 2 weekends ago, I painted Jem's bedroom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we moved into this place. And when we moved in, it was the idyllic little boy's bedroom with Winnie the Pooh, huge, ginormous, gorgeous, well-done, professional Winnie the Pooh murals all over the wall. And we said we were going to paint it. And he was like, it's okay when you get around to it. Well, you know, he turned 17 and he's a senior in high school. And I was like, I better get around to that. So it was full on crazy painting over, as my husband said, we got to get rid of the poo on the walls.
That's right.
So that's what I've been doing. Okay. Well, Dr. Grant Pichet is here to answer your questions, not about crafts, but if you have questions about bead curtains, I feel like she can handle it now. She is an expert in the field of autism in her spare time when she's not beading. And she's been working in this field for over 40 years. So I can't think of anybody better equipped to answer your questions. Although we do have to give the disclaimer that there is no expert in any field who can give individual specific advice in this particular format, right? In order to do that, the expert needs to have eyes on the situation and on the individual. That's the only thing that really does that individual justice, right? But you can be writing in and asking questions of a general nature to get to tour the mind of an expert and take that information and take it back to the expert who has eyes on the situation. So having said that, I do want to remind everybody that Dr. Grant Pichet is a clinical psychologist, a licensed clinical psychologist, and a BCBA, you're a BCBAD, which it's too many letters. There we go. It's too many letters. I was trying to tell a parent the other day about a BCBA and a BCAB and the BC, I don't know. And we both decided to retire from alphabet land. right? So it is what it is. Anyway, we're saying good morning to Joanne. They want to know any suggestions to decrease such behavior at school is appreciated. I feel like I missed something. Traven, look and see. I'm going to put a pin in that one for a second and go to one of the questions that we had written on our live chat on Autism-Live. But I feel like I'm missing part of the question there. Because which behavior, I don't know. Okay, so they want to know, hi Shannon, please, advice on how we help our 9-year-old get better with reading comprehension. He's reading fine, but doesn't seem to comprehend. His rigidity comes in the way of rereading, which helps him to get the answers. He struggles to infer from the reading comprehension passages too. He hates to narrate, retell as well. We see behaviors rise when he is pushed to do tasks related to these. He is ATEC 24 now. Does diet, homeopathy, detox, nutrition, and ABA. They go on to say that he's considered mild with autism. Again, 9 years old. And the latest ATEC scores were 24 to 26. We have come a long way, but are getting desperate that time is running out despite all the brain is plastic studies, and that the big roadblock seems to be reading comprehension. Okay. They are, in Africa.
Oh, wow.
So
that's wonderful. And, I would ask, of course, first of all, how many hours of ABA? That always is probably one of the most important questions we can ask. And if reading comprehension is the only issue, then we have nothing really much to worry about.
And I do want to tell you, because they say that there are no tracking or eyesight issues. They've looked into that. And we know sequencing slash cause effect are still developing. They're doing ABA home sessions and facilitation at school, but they don't say how many hours of ABA.
Great.
And since they are in Johannesburg, I wonder if they might be with friends of ours.
So I do recommend that if you are in Joburg and you are not with the STAR Academy, you should probably join STAR or contact them. They are our affiliate and they follow the CARD model exactly. And in fact, they use Skills, which is our curriculum and our program. And I highly recommend them. I started them out myself. We still have constant contact with them and provide training and oversight. And they are a fantastic program. So what I would say, though, with regards to reading comprehension, if you yourself would like to get on Skills, which you can access, skillsforautism.com, you'll see on there that there's a whole section for reading comprehension. Now, reading comprehension has, we generally try to evaluate our kids in two ways. First, to identify if it is a reading issue or it's a comprehension issue. If your child also has issues with listening comprehension when you read out loud to them, then you are probably going to need to focus on comprehension separately. Reading has its own process. And when you look into Skills, you'll see a whole array of lessons that can increase and improve reading skills. But comprehension is a different thing. And so the way that we go about it is we begin with very, very small passages, maybe just three word sentences. And then a question is asked after the child reads the three word sentence. And then perhaps it's turned into a four word sentence. For instance, you know, he ate cookies. And then it became, and then we would ask, what did he eat? And we would also ask, who ate the cookies? And once the child is able to master that, the next phase is to make the sentence a little bit more complicated. For instance, he ate chocolate chip cookies, so that then the question would be, what kind of cookies did he eat? And who ate the cookies? And so on. And so there's a lot of, I guess, types of questions right after the reading of the passage. And then we gradually increase the size of the passage so that we're able to get to paragraphs and essentially after that, even to pages and chapters and books and so on. So it's a whole process under the title Reading Comprehension. And there's several lessons because as you go through this, you'll notice that there are different areas that might be contributing to the child's difficulty. It could be as simple as lack of vocabulary. So there are certain areas maybe that the child's not understanding correctly, or it could be a completely different thing, which has to do with distractibility and the child being distracted by things when a passage is too long. And that's more of kind of an ADHD type issue. So you sort of have to figure out which one it is. But my recommendation to you would be to really go on Skills, because you'll find a lot of different suggestions, a big section on reading comprehension right there.
Absolutely. And you can go to skillsforautism.com. A little later on in the program, I'm going to read, because they always have a message for us this month about what's free and available and discounted at Skills and at IBT, the Institute for Behavioral Training. I'm going to bring that up in just a second here. Okay, we've got a question that is coming to us from, as Facebook tells us, one of our top fans. They categorize people now and they go, oh, this person is a top fan. So a five-year-old is constantly removing pants and pull-ups and keeping hands down there constantly. It's becoming a big problem, especially during ABA sessions and Zoom school. I don't know how to change this behavior. I tried pinning shirt and shorts and tying a string very tight, which sounds concerning. So what advice do you have for them?
You know, like, I'm always amazed, Shannon, that so many of our parents are struggling with things, even though they have an ABA program. So this is kind of why your ABA program is there. You know, we are there to help with these specific issues. I can imagine that it's a difficult thing with distance learning. This is, you know, short of being able to tie the pants on in a way that the child cannot open them, which would be pretty difficult. The only other thing that you can do is block the behavior, prevent the behavior from occurring. And really, if you prevent the behavior from occurring, you would need to someone would physically need to be there, obviously, to prevent the child from doing that, and would need to place the child on a reinforcement schedule of not doing that. So it's sometimes we reinforce the absence of a behavior and we increase that period of time as well. So it is one of those things that can be done, but you would really need a behavior analyst to sit with you. And first they would get the what we call baseline frequency. So they would measure a few things, like they would track, and you can help with these. When does it happen? Does it happen when the child is engaged in an activity? Does it happen when the child is alone? What are the circumstances where it happens? Wherever possible, we want to prevent those circumstances, but obviously it's not always possible. So now we get the frequency in it under those conditions. So let's say it happens when the child is alone, and then we want to see, and no demands are placed, right? So during that period of time, we want to see what is the, how often does it happen? And we get a baseline of that. So for many different days, we measure how often it's happening. Now let's say, and then we average that up and we say, oh, you know what, every time he's alone, within 10 minutes it begins. And even if you come in and interrupt it, it'll keep recurring and that sort of stuff. So once you have that information, now the goal is to expand that 10-minute period to 11 minutes of non-occurrence. So, you know, now we're going to leave him alone for 11 minutes and then come in and heavily reward. Good job keeping your hands on the table. Great job. And here's a big reinforcer for you. And so you basically shape the behavior of not opening his pants and not playing down there. And so, and at the same time, it would be very helpful if you are, it will increase the period of non-occurrence if you give the child something that occupies his hands otherwise. So for instance, an activity that requires use of your hands so that he doesn't think about doing that, right? So it's something completely different. And at the same time, obviously, if the task is more difficult, in other words, if it's difficult for him to undo his pants, then that helps as well. Now, those are sort of behavioral techniques that you can use. It does take quite a bit of effort because it does take someone to be there, and it is a shaping procedure. And shaping procedures usually take a lot of time because you have to do them very gradually. At the same time, you probably, I mean, I don't know the level of functioning of the child, and that's always the issue with our show. But if your child is at the point of functioning where it matters to him how other people perceive him, then it is probably a good time to begin giving him some education, some instruction about this being a private activity and not an activity that you can do when others are either on the computer or around you. It is what, you know, something that should only be done at, let's say, night when you're in your bed alone. So you start to put rules around this behavior so that the child isn't prevented altogether, which would be kind of not a normal thing, right? But it is limiting that behavior to private moments, perhaps when he's in bed in his at night alone, as opposed to when he's, let's say, in distance learning or if someone else is around. And you start to regulate that so that he, all these types of, you know, behaviors, if as long as we can put them inside an appropriate time frame and move them to a specific time of the day, it's easier to manage, because from the child's perspective, it's like, okay, it's easier to wait for something that can occur than eliminate that behavior altogether. The last thing I want to say about that is that, you know, anytime that you reduce something that is intrinsically rewarding, and this is intrinsically rewarding, it is one of the reinforcers. Masturbation in general is one of the reinforcers that is considered a primary. It's as rewarding as food, for instance. So anytime you reduce a reinforcer in someone's life, you need to replace it with a reinforcer somewhere else. So the best thing you could do is to engage the child and keep the child very, very busy and give them a ton of reinforcers when they're not engaged, like instead of allowing them to engage in this activity. It could very well just be a habit that can be broken just by keeping the child super busy and super reinforced.
Yeah, I love that advice. And I would hope that, because you say that he's doing it during ABA sessions, I would really hope that your therapist would be all over that.
Right.
I do want to say, from the perspective of, you know, hearing so many parents talk about this, I remember when my mom was still alive, and my mom was a sewer, and she got very interested in a thread where parents were talking about how do you keep your kids out of their pants, either from, you know, touching themselves, or for instance, there was one girl that was taking her poo at night and smearing it on the walls. And parents were giving all these different suggestions. But one of the ones that my mom got really excited about this, because she was a sewer and she could conceptualize this. But, you know, overalls are something that work really well. Not your standard overalls that are like loose on the top and have those clippy things, but they make, you know, onesie overalls that have a button way up here so that they cannot get their hand in the side of the overalls. And that cuts down on a lot of different things, although they can still touch themselves through the fabric. But the other thing that parents really, that weren't sewers were doing, was buying summer weight footsie pajamas. And they would cut the arms off of it, and, you know, cut the feet off of them, and they would put them on their child backwards, mm-hmm. so that the zip or the snap is in the back. And then you put, you know, they got to be really lightweight summer, but then you put their shorts on top of that, and there's no getting in there.
That's
kind of genius, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, Shannon, like this is just like blocking, right? It's yeah. The same as having a person there with much less effort. So yeah, if you can, a lot of times these types of behaviors are habits. And once you prevent the child for a period of time, they engage differently.
But I love, one of the many things I love about you, Dr. Grampy-Shea, is that you make the point that this is something that's pleasurable. And in the right circumstances, you know, there's nothing wrong about it. It just has to be in the right place. And that when we take something away in one circumstance, we need to give them something that's as rewarding or more rewarding, because that's the humane thing to do. It's also the thing that works, right?
Well, absolutely. And aside from the fact that it is the right thing, it's the humane thing, what I often see, Shannon, is that parents, like we all, will do an intervention, and, you know, interventions are not always fun. They're demand, you're placing demand, and you're preventing things that the child has naturally gotten into that are possibly rewarding. And then over time, you end up just making an environment for the child that's completely aversive. And then you wonder why the child is getting aggressive or upset or resisting all instruction. It's because the amount of reinforcer in their environment has reduced. And if you think about it, that is true of everyone, not just our kids, all of us, right? I mean, it's funny, we started this show by talking about what have we started doing during COVID, right?
Yeah.
And if you think about it, COVID has brought with it some removal of reinforcers, just natural removal, right? Like we cannot really see our friends as much, which was reinforcing. We can't go out to restaurants. We can't go to movie theaters. We can't go to parks. There's a lot of stuff we cannot do anymore that were reinforcers. So we all are at home, and what are we doing? We're trying to think of ways to reinforce ourselves with those crafts and things we were talking about. So it's natural and it's human nature. As parents, we need to just make sure there's a balance of reward for our kids, especially if we get into really good, high quality ABA programs, which are demanding, because it's like intensive tutoring. So we just need to make sure there's an increase in reward as well.
Yeah. And we always are talking on the show here about quality ABA, because for years I was just talking about ABA, and then I realized, oh, everybody didn't have the same ABA. It wasn't all equal and even, it wasn't all quality ABA. But quality ABA, I love what you always say, it has to be fair. It has to be just. And there has to be stuff in it for the kiddos. Otherwise, it won't work, and it's not the thing that's right. And I really love that about what you do. Okay, so I'm asking for Joanne, who had written in. Can you rewrite in? Because I don't know which behavior you're talking about. You asked for suggestions to decrease such behavior. I don't know what the behavior is. So will you please write and tell me what that is? But another person said, hi, my daughter, 2 years old and 2 months, only says words through songs, but not in a way to communicate with us. Still can't say what she wants. She just grabs our hands and leads us. How can we help her to say words to communicate? Thank you.
Oh, that's wonderful. So I love that for many reasons. Your child is two. That is fantastic. Please get into a high quality intensive ABA program. If you're in LA, Los Angeles area, I will take you myself, because I really want to start some of our two-year-olds on high quality intensive programs. And I'll tell you why, because your child singing is wonderful. It indicates that it's a girl, right, Shannon?
If yes. I remember. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That she has the ability to vocalize and verbalize, which is fabulous. And so now all we have to do is shape those into communicative speech so that she understands that these words, these sounds that I'm making are useful and meaningful. And so the first thing we do with that is what we call is MEND training. MENDs are requests. And when you are one and two, you begin using your language typically to make requests. Now, she is not doing that necessarily because her requests are already being met with an answer. You're taking care of them when she takes you by the hand and leads you to an object. So she doesn't need to use her language to get that object. So you need to stop giving her the object when she just takes you by the hand, but instead begin requiring a vocalization for each object. Now, it's hard when you first start that, because obviously your child's gonna, let's say the child wants juice and they take you to the fridge and you open the fridge. Typically, this is what we do as parents. And we tend to know our kids pretty well, right? So we're like, what do you want? Do you want the juice or do you want this? And the child will probably just like maybe indicate which one, or you'll just guess and you'll give it to your child. Sometimes we even give our children one thing, they reject it, and then we give them another. And we basically are doing everything we can to meet their needs without them having to vocalize. And so as a result, the child learns, I don't really need to vocalize. I just need to kind of grunt or touch or push someone or pull them over to the object or pull them by the hand or whatever. And mom will take care of my needs, right? So what you do instead immediately is begin trying to get the child's vocalization under SD control, is how we say it. So you begin trying to get the child to imitate a sound. It doesn't have to be the full name of the object you're giving, but a sound that resembles that. For instance, ooh could be the sound that represents juice in the beginning. And if you can take your child, when your child takes you, let's say, to the fridge, and you know the child wants juice, hold the bottle of juice and say, ooh, and until your child says, ooh, don't give them the juice. You give them a little bit of juice, and you actually can pour it in a cup, hold it, and practice it repeatedly for every sip so that the child starts to request juice and get it. This will then teach your child that saying ooh is actually useful, because when I want juice, I will say ooh. And you can prompt it many, many times. Each time you can have the child just imitate you initially. Then gradually what you do is you reduce your prompt. So you're holding the juice. Instead of standing right in front of the child and saying ooh, you'll just make your mouth like this. And your child will then begin to say ooh, and then you'll give them the juice. Now you get to a point where the child can consistently request juice by saying ooh. Okay, now your task is to shape that, the sound ooh, into juice. So now you will begin imitating juice and have the child increase their speech. That's shaping. These are all the things that a good ABA program would naturally do. And that is just one label, one MAND, because there are many other MANDs, obviously. So your child will want other food objects, will want play, toy objects, will want to go outside, activities, will want access to people. So all the things that your child wants become this kind of library of MANDs. And that's how your child learns that language is useful. And then before you know it, you can enter another phase of language development, which is called tacting. And that is where your child's not necessarily requesting something, but they're sharing what they see. And they're pointing to or just labeling things they see in their environment. And the reason they do that is so that they can share it with you. So, you know how like kids sit in the back seat of the car, typically developing kids will like point to everything, right? Truck and light and cat and whatever it is. And that's the goal of tact programming. And then before you know it, after tact development, you go into introverbals where the child is now, communicating about things that are not visibly present. So that's kind of the development of language, but I explained it in a very condensed manner. It is something that takes a lot of time and effort, which is why this is the time for you to begin an intensive 40 hours a week ABA program, where a lot of the focus is on the development of communicative speech.
Yeah, you're very fond of saying every waking hour, and that's really what it takes at that age, every waking hour. So get yourself a good ABA program, fight for 40 full hours of that, and then learn everything you can so that you can be doing it. My life, the way my life is right now, don't get me crying, but everything that I have in my life right now is because we did that with my son he had just turned 3 when we started with CARD. And I was told by people that, you know, he was never going to be able to hold a job. He was never, you know what, and all those people, I don't know where they are, nor do I care, because my life is rich today because we did this work. And it was hard. It was the most worthwhile thing I will ever do in my entire life. So there you go. Okay. Lots of comments that I'm going to get to here. Somebody wants to know, I have a 7-year-old with autism. How can I help him focus and attending to non-preferred tasks? Also, we are in Toronto, Canada. Are there any affiliates here and is Skills free to use? Thank you so much for sharing your wealth and knowledge. And when you're done answering this, I'll give the weekly announcement about what's happening at IBT and Skills.
Wonderful. So it's a tough question in the sense that, you know, not attending to the appropriate things is one of our biggest issues across autism, right? It's kind of take ADHD and multiply it by 10 in terms of our kids having a hard time attending to the right thing. So there's no easy answer to say this is how you get a child to pay attention to the right things, because it's all a process of doing many hours of intervention where the child is rewarded for attending to the right things and not rewarded for attending to the wrong things. So, you know, this is exactly why Shannon and I often say that it's so important to get kids into these ABA programs, even at the age of 7, 8 and so on, because it is a discipline. It does teach you over time. You know, my mentor Lovas used to say, we never really intend to teach everything. We just intend to teach our kids how to learn. And it is so true. Because during the first years of doing ABA, it's almost like, it's like a child where you teach them really well how to regulate their own attention, how to work for rewards, how to pay attention, how to care about a teacher's reward. You know, those types of things, which are so important for our kids to learn. So I think it would be very beneficial to you, and I'm sorry, in Canada, there are a couple of programs in Canada, but the problem is that there's very little state funding. Of course, as you know, the health insurance system in Canada is quite different. There is coverage in Ontario, Toronto, but it is limited, and also you have to get on a waiting list in order to access the funding. Once you get the funding, you can use it for ABA, but there is, from what I understand, there's no movement on this waiting list. And Shannon, you can tell them more about Skills so that perhaps that'll help, and also maybe IBT.
Absolutely. And what I, hear from friends and families in Canada is that there is funding that's for a set period of time that maybe is like from the time your child is from 3 to 5 or 6, and that you can't get on the waiting list until your child is a certain age, and the waiting list is 2 and 3 years long. So go figure that catch 22. What I recommend to our Canada families is to get started right away, learning everything that they can using Skills and IBT. So it's a good time for us to talk about this. So skillsforautism.com is not free, but I'm going to give you a phone number where you can call to get a discount if you say that I sent you. And it's a very reasonable cost. And there are some people that you can apply at different times of the year for grants, even to cover that. IBT, which is the Institute for Behavioral Training, offers all of the teaching modules, e-learning teaching modules. It's a video that you watch where they teach you about a certain subject, right? And you can pick from literally hundreds and hundreds of different topics. So let me tell you what the discounts and the free items are this week. This week for ABA parents and guardians, IBT is offering free IBT parent e-learning courses under the category of parent useful strategies for your home. So those are the ones that are free this week. For educators, they are offering IBT educator e-learning modules, educator impact on the classroom. Those are also available to educators for free. There is something called an RBT training, which is registered behavior technician. And that is an online training that is the base of everything that a beginning therapist needs to learn to get certified. And there's more steps after the online learning, But if you, it's a 40-hour course. Normally it's a retail value of, I think, $440, and they are offering it for free on a case-by-case basis to parents who are in need of it. All you have to do is call the phone number that I'm about to give you for any of these things and say, Shannon sent me, I want the friends and family discount. They, in addition to all of that, they will offer a 10% discount right now on all skills products. All you have to do is say that I sent you. Okay, so the phone number to call for any of these things is 877, that is a toll-free number, 877-975-4559. Again, that's 877-975-4559. And I encourage you to take a look and see what is there, because, you know, it is available on your schedule, your time. You can pause the video, go back, watch it. It's just invaluable, and it's amazing people doing those trainings. But if when you, because your question was, is skills free to use? And again, it isn't. It's very reasonable cost. Ask for the discount. If the it's a monthly subscription, but it's so much lower than all the other things that are out there, you guys. But if it is still more than is what's capable for you, please reach out to me and I'll give you some suggestions about where to go for grants and scholarships. How's that? You can reach me at s.penrod@autism-live. s.penrod@autism-live. Yeah.
I was looking down because I was trying to find, I know there is an ABA school, a program in Toronto, and I was trying to find the name of it. I know that Monarch is a program out in Toronto area as well. You might want to look at the Monarch program. But the other thing that I wanted to say is that ACT, Autism Care Today, is also happy to help parents who cannot afford the license for skill. I believe the license for skill is something like $70, $75 per month. So it's not a whole lot, but ACT, our nonprofit organization, is also able to help support you if you need help with that.
And I have to say, you know, ACT is a wonderful organization that was founded by Dr. Grant Bichet for families in need for all kinds of different things, right? But I have previously served on the board of ACT, and I know that one of the things that we always loved doing was giving scholarships to skills, because we were always, fundraising is hard, right? And when we could give something that the bigger the bang for the buck, the happier we were. And if we knew that a family really wanted to use skills, that for a very minimal amount of money per year, they would get a big bang for their buck. So it was something we loved to give scholarships for. So just putting, and there are other places too, where there's the potential to get, you know, grants and things as well. I want to say, because somebody wrote in, and I'm sure I missed your window, but if you're watching this later back recorded, that one of our viewers said, good morning, I'm online with my child's online learning. I've got a 5-minute break, so I just wanted to say good morning, and good morning to you. I'm sorry I missed you. Hey, I also wanted to say, somebody wrote in and said, I realize this is off topic, and it isn't, but my 35-year-old son may be autistic as well as myself, just turned 60. And we're seeing more and more adults who are getting the diagnosis and feeling freed by getting the diagnosis. So sending you a hug. And she said, no information in my day. So this is very educational, and thank you.
And I want to say, you know, it's funny because yesterday morning I was doing some diagnostic evaluations for patients, and you know, autism is one of those diagnoses that's kind of interesting, because I've been diagnosing kids for so long now, Shannon, that I've gone through like 3-4 different versions of the diagnostic manual. And I always say, when I'm talking about diagnosis, I always tell people, you know, it's funny for me, because if as a in the world, if as scientists we are changing the symptom criteria or the symptoms that are required for a diagnosis every few years, then basically that tells you we don't know a lot about that disorder, right? If you go back and look at the DSM-3, which is I think the first DSM, the diagnostic manual that I used when I was first licensed. I mean, I actually trained on the diagnostic manual too, but as of three, and then you look at going to four and then four revised and then five, they are pretty different. The criteria for autism has changed numerous times. I mean, numerous times. And sometimes I wonder if you took all those children back who were diagnosed with DSM-3, would they fit under the diagnosis now or not? And then we also have a lot of people talking to us about how it has changed. It used to be different disorders, you know, pervasive developmental disorder, Asperger's, autism, et cetera. And now it's kind of a spectrum. And some people think it's good that it's a spectrum, and other people think it's not so good that it's a spectrum, because there's a huge range in this spectrum. And some people are very, very minimally affected, and others are very, very severely affected. And neither one feels that it's appropriate to be in the same group. But all that aside, what I want to say about the diagnosis is that sometimes, you know, the diagnosis right now requires that you exhibit three symptoms in the first area, which is sort of social communication, and then two symptoms in the second area, which is kind of repetitive behaviors or repetitive and sensory types of behaviors. You might, and if you have all of that, then you will get an actual diagnosis of ASD, and then there's still a severity level to it. But a lot of people feel they have maybe one of the symptoms or two, just not enough to get the formal diagnosis, but still a couple of symptoms, you know? And so you when you hear about autism, you feel like, well, that does explain some of the issues I have. And that isn't uncommon. Shannon, as you know, I always say that I feel like autism and then ADHD, and then just like, it's all a continuum, right? Which is one of the reasons that we can change diagnosis by doing ABA, because the more you change behavior, the fewer of those symptoms the child is now exhibiting. And of course, as the fewer symptoms are exhibited, then the diagnosis eventually no longer applies. But it is, I do want to say that if you feel that some of these things relate to you, a lot of the interventions would also be helpful to you. Shannon will tell you, in skills, some of our highest level lessons and programming are really for people who are very, very minimally affected by autism. For instance, teaching someone how to tell a joke or infer something that has happened by just looking at surroundings or facial expression. Those are very advanced lessons, and they would perhaps be helpful to you as well.
Yeah, neither my husband nor I qualify for a diagnosis of autism, but we will both tell you where on the thing we have different things, and they're different from each other. And I can tell you that there are things and skills that we both need to work on and are working on. For me, it's ending a conversation. I don't know how to end a conversation. It's why the show runs long sometimes, right? For my husband, and I'm just going to tell on him, he finds it very difficult in a social situation to join a conversation. He gets it, like he's like, why? I try to get in there and say something and I can't just get it. And I've gone through the thing with him on skills. You just need to work on this, this, and this, right? There's something for all of us in there. There's for sure things for individuals who are on the autism spectrum, but there's something for all of us in there and not just little kids. I just have to say that. Okay, if it's okay with you, I'm gonna press on for other questions. So my son is 14, years, he's stimming a lot. Is there any way we can bring it down? When a demand is placed, he gets aggressive. We have ABA come home still. He is aggressive now and then.
Yeah. So there's two, I'm just taking notes because I don't want to forget either one. So there's two separate things here. Self-stimulatory behavior, which we also refer to as stimming, has a different function than aggressive behavior that increases due to demand. And I'll explain what that means. With the self-stimulatory behavior, you'd need to identify Did I lose you there?
Or nope, I'm here.
Okay, great. You need to identify other types of behaviors that would replace that behavior, both in function and in form. So depending on what it is, and you can tell us more, I can give you some ideas about how to try to replace those types of behaviors. For example, if the self-stimulatory behavior includes hands, then you would want to give activities that prevent the hands from freely flapping. So these are behaviors and other activities that prevent the self-stimulatory behavior from happening. But that aside, the issue of the child getting angry and showing aggression when a demand is placed is a very, very common thing. And that is basically what we call escape maintained behavior. And that generally means that if every time a demand is placed and the child doesn't want to follow through with that demand, if they aggress towards others, then the typical reaction from others is to back off and not force the demand. So the child then, our kids are intelligent, figures out very quickly that if I don't want to do something that they ask of me, all I have to do is be aggressive. And so that aggression is actual communication. It's the child saying, leave me alone, I don't want to deal with this. And so I think you said the child is 14, and that makes it a little bit harder. That's why a lot of these interventions are a little bit easier to manage when the child is younger. So at 14, though, it's still the same treatment. Essentially, when the aggression occurs, the answer is, now the practicality is a different issue, but the answer is that you must follow through with the demand and actually physically help the child carry through with the demand. Now, you can make the demand easier. You can certainly make it an easier demand, and you must reinforce the follow through a great deal. So let's say you ask the child to do something, you can make it a very simple request, an easier version of what you were asking, and any kind of attempt on your son's part to actually carry through and follow through and do what you're asking should be heavily rewarded, right? But if there is aggression, you should not reward. And if there's aggression, you should not back off. That's the issue with reteaching our kids how to not use aggression as a form of communication. Now, on the other hand, you should also teach your child separately how to ask for a break or how to say, I don't want to do that right now. And it doesn't have to be vocal. It could also be touching an icon that is, shows time out. So there are things that you do where you essentially start to reward the child using normal, typical, healthy communication, either language or iconic, to tell you that they don't want to do something, and you do not reward aggression or tantrums or other challenging behaviors as a form of communication. That is what a typical ABA program sets up to do. And we do that with all of our kids, whether they're 2 or 14.
Wonderful. Thank you. We're getting down to the end, and I want to squeeze in a bunch of questions all at once. So I'm going to rapid fire at you. Somebody wants to know, is it negative attention seeking or a sensory issue? How do you demarcate? For example, screaming. How would you tell if it's negative attention seeking or a sensory issue? It's a good question.
It's a very good question. I mean, the easiest answer to that is, does it happen alone, when the child is alone? Because if the child is doing it when they're alone, then it's a sensory thing. And if they're doing it when someone is around, then it's more likely an attention thing, because then they can get the attention of the person. Sensory is one of those terms that we use when it's not one of the typical functions that we can identify. And the typical functions that we can identify usually involve another person, either giving attention or another object, gaining access to an object or an activity or something like that.
Our mom that wrote in about, our top fan who wrote in about hands in the pants said everything in capital letters. You said hit a home run. Thank you, ladies. It does seem like a habit and it's during idle time. I don't want to shame them and your suggestions give me some peace. Isn't that lovely? Now at the beginning, Joanne had written in a question and I said, be more specific. And she said her kiddo is having trouble distinguishing WH questions. Hmm. For example, when shown a picture of a red circle, he will answer circle or red to both what is it and what color is it? How to teach discrimination.
Okay. So discrimination training is extremely important. I cannot express more intently how important that is, because it becomes the basis of all future learning. I will tell you how to deal with it here. Here it's a very simple thing where you basically will either, if your child is an auditory learner, you will emphasize when you say color. So you'll say, what is it? And you'll say, what color is it? Like that. And you'll discriminate between the two. Or if your child is a visual learner, you can always hold up a color, the word color, when you say, what color is it? And that way the child will start to differentiate. And then you fade that back, obviously. In general, discrimination goes through this whole phase. We call it a seven phase thing. It's very complicated that I would want to talk to you about it right now, but it is important. And if you go on IBT, actually, the Institute for Behavior Training website, there's a module about discrimination training, I believe. And that's a super important module because it takes you through this phase of explaining to you that everything is a target and then there are distractors in the environment, and you take one target and bring in distractors and you random rotate them. And you take the child through these phases of learning how to discriminate between two situations, two objects, two responses, etc. And that becomes a really important thing to do very well because it is the basis of all future learning.
Wonderful. I also want to say Camp Discovery is a wonderful thing for all of you who have kiddos who are learning a language. Camp Discovery is a free app and it's available on both the iTunes store and on the Google Play store. Go get it, put it in their hands on an iPad or a device, and it does some amazing things. And it automatically does that kind of what she was just talking about. If they get that question wrong, it will adjust to what they're doing and give them, prompt them in a way that helps them to get it right.
That's right. And it has our earliest, I would say 50 or so lessons. And the good news is, Shannon, that I think we're going to invest in developing additional lessons on technology, because I think over the period of COVID, we came to realize how important it is for our children to be able to practice these types of things on their own.
Absolutely. It's Camp Discovery, you guys. And if you have a skills account, it will give you a little code that you put into the game, and it links your child's skills account. So it'll tell your team what he's mastering on the game. It's brilliant. I kind of love it more than just a little. Okay, we have several suggestions also for sensory things for the mom with the hands down the pants. I want to say thank you to everybody for writing those in. Somebody says, hello, double heart. My son is getting a new BCBA and I don't know how it's going to work with his telehealth. I feel very overwhelmed because he doesn't like video meetings. What's your advice? He's already doing distance learning and he gets very distracted. I don't see how telehealth is going to work. What's funny to me, the irony here, is that you're doing the distance learning and now you're going to do the telehealth. And often the telehealth makes it possible for the distance learning to happen. You're getting it sort of backwards, but still, I want to spread some hope on you, Dr. Grampy-Shay.
Yeah, I if he's doing distance learning, do not worry about telehealth. Telehealth is a lot easier because the therapists who are doing telehealth are pretty clever. At least I've seen ours, and we train ours to do crazy things on the screen in order to maintain your child's attention and reward your child frequently. So it's a lot more fun and a lot more rewarding than just regular distance learning, let me tell you. So I would, and you know, with our kids, we actually like have them get up and move around with the laptop, with the iPad and so on. But I would, you know, I think what makes it hard for everyone, Shannon, is just the number of hours. With, you know, 6 hours of distance learning and additional hours of telehealth, anyone would burn out. So I think the best for all of our kids is just to kind of reduce the number of hours wherever possible. But that aside, don't worry, the telehealth will be fun.
There you go. Last question, because we got a minute and a half here. How can I improve my six-year-old son's gross motor skills like jumping or bicycle or climbing?
Oh, well, all of those things that you mentioned are activities that we have listed in skills with very specific lessons behind each one. So since I can't really do much service to each of those in 1 minute, I would just recommend that you look on skills in the motor curriculum and you'll find full lesson plans to teach each of those.
There you go. I also want to recommend that on Pinterest, Autism Live has its own page on Pinterest, and we have boards with filled with fun activities for fine motor, gross motor, you know, everything that there is. It's all available to you on our Pinterest. Look for us, Autism Live, and follow us. And please follow us on whatever way that you watch us. We appreciate you when you give us good reviews, because it allows other people to learn about us and to find us, because we don't waste time on and money on marketing. We count on you to tell other people about us. Dr. Grampy Shea, thank you so much for being here with us. Well, we're going to see you in 2 weeks, and we will look forward to seeing you then. So thank you so much for being here. I want to remind all of you, we're back tomorrow. And in fact, tomorrow we have a very special guest, an author, a mom, an author of a memoir book about her journey through autism. But I also, our plan for tomorrow is to go through some very basic things to help you with distance learning as you're getting started with distance learning and to help you with your kiddos. So that will be tomorrow. Until then, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you too. Bye-bye for now.